Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, we have the latest updates on the aftermath of the Alfred Alongo shooting in El Cajon. We'll tell you about a Santee race with some big money flowing into it. And then our newsmaker interviews today are with Kim Raddatz and Bill Keel. They're two candidates, each representing a slate running for the San Miguel Fire District Board. At stake is the future of the fire district itself. And finally, on Destination East County, we'll have all the most fun festivals and events coming up as we enter the holiday season. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The father of Alfred Alongo, the Ugandan immigrant who was fatally shot last month by an El Cajon police officer, has announced plans to establish the Alfred Alongo Justice and Unity Foundation for Police Reform. In addition, Alongo's sister has filed a claim against the city of El Cajon alleging negligence in her brother's death. In addition, an attorney representing Alongo's widow and children has announced plans to sue the city. Richard Alongo Abuka said at a rally in Balboa Park, "Police are supposed to use a gun as a last resort. From the time police arrived to the time my son was dead was 1 minute and 29 seconds. He called Officer Richard Gonzalez, who fired that fateful shot, a coward. Family members described Alongo as a loving father and normally joyful person who suffered a mental breakdown after the death of a friend. He was acting erratically and reportedly walking into traffic when his sister Lucy called 911 seeking help. Her claim against the city states that El Cajon Police Officer Gonzalez knew that her brother was having a mental crisis since dispatch coded the call as a 5150. That means officers could detain Alongo for a mental health disorder. The claim further states that the officer knew or should have known that Lucy was present and could assist officers in detaining her brother. But instead, the officer shot and killed Alongo as Lucy stood by screaming and begging them not to hurt him. The claim contends that Officer Gonzalez acted negligently in not waiting for a psychiatric emergency response team, which was dispatched on another call, or using non-lethal alternatives. Instead, the officer opted to confront and provoke Alongo while knowing he lacked the emotional and mental fitness to make a rational response, the claim contends. With the officer advancing on him gun drawn, Alongo withdrew a vaping pen or smoking device. He pointed at the officer and assumed a shooting stance, a fact that is confirmed on video. Believing a weapon was being trained on him, the officer fired four shots, killing Alongo in the parking lot of a Mexican restaurant. The nonprofit foundation that Alongo's father announced he has formed aims to improve training for police in psychology, human behavior, criminal justice, and discipline. Alongo's father says he wants his son's death to be a turning point, sparking positive change. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with the report from Santee. Santee's city council race is heating up. Mason Heron has received about 98% of his campaign contributions from outside of Santee, and many of those contributions are from developers. One of his opponents, Stephen Houlihan, is backed by environmentalists and has taken zero money from developers. 76% of Houlihan's donations are from Santee residents. Houlihan is best known for leading the successful fight to stop the Quail Brush gas power plant from opening up next to Mission Trails Regional Park. Environmental leader Van Collinsworth, head of Preserve Wild Santee, has characterized Mason Heron's council campaign as a developer's delight that could result in major new developments and more traffic gridlock. Heron, a legislative aide to Assemblyman Brian Jones, has declared over $74,000 in contributions so far. Heavy donors include HomeFed Corporation, owner of Finita Ranch in Santee's Northern Hills, TC Construction, Newland, Cornerstone, and Mastercraft Homes. So what might these developers be purchasing? Recently obtained court documents state, HomeFed anticipates submittal of a project application to the city in the next few months. It is clear that HomeFed is attempting to purchase favor for their massive project application, says Collinsworth, who adds, "Follow the money."
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, we're going to be talking with some candidates who are running for the San Miguel District Fire Board. This is a very important race. A few years ago during the recession, the district was facing some hard times when the property taxes fell and a station had to be shut down, so the board made the difficult decision, voting unanimously, to partner with CAL FIRE to handle the firefighting services. But a divided new board in July voted to return the district to local control as a standalone district. Now, there are 9 candidates running in this race. 8 of those are running in slates, 4 on each side. One wants to redo that vote and stay with CAL FIRE, and the other wants to return to a standalone district. Today, it's my pleasure to welcome Kim Raddatz and Bill Keel to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Raddatz, you want to return to being a standalone district, and Mr. Keel wants to stay with CAL FIRE. Can each of you start by telling us a little bit about your qualifications for the job, your occupations, and what strengths you bring to the job?
Yeah, hi, I'm Kim Raddatz. I'm a retired fire chief for San Diego County and in Central California. I also do strategic planning and organizational management on the side as a consultant. I spent 34 years in the fire service, and 22 of those were with the Lakeside Fire Protection District. Because of my fire service training and being a fire chief for the city of Coronado and then later on in Central California for Salinas Monterey, I have the ability of having a lot of wide range, both state and national contacts, which has really helped me see on how districts are run, how departments should be going, and have a lot of influence and contacts in the state of California.
Very good.
Thank you.
And Mr. Keel, you're a director on the board currently. Tell us a little bit more about your background and experience.
I'm a civil engineer by profession, and most of my career, I managed construction projects ranging in value from $5 million to $100 million. I'm a numbers guy, and I am a fiscally conservative person. What this district needs right now is somebody that understands finance. We went from a 3-year, $5 million budget deficit to a 3-year, $3 million budget surplus. We need somebody that's going to be able to make good fiscal decisions and be aware that we need to remain fiscally solvent for the long term. And that's the strength that I bring to this position.
Okay, thank you. And I want to briefly read off the names of the candidates who aren't here today. We invited, a representative from each side. But on the side of those who want to stay with CAL FIRE, with Director Keel here, there's Dave Rickards, Rick Augustine, and Jeff Nelson. And on the other side, with Kim Raddatz, those who want to restore local control and give CAL FIRE the boot are Kerry Johnston, Charlie Cleaves, and Everett Eblith. And there's also an independent candidate running that says he hasn't made up his mind yet, and his name is Randy Dibbs. So let's start with you, Director Keel. You were not on the board when the vote was made to outsource to CAL FIRE, but you did vote against undoing that contract and against returning to a freestanding district. Can you please justify your position?
I was actually president of the board, not this current year, but last year. And CAL FIRE has been a very good partner. They worked with us. One of the things that my opposition purports is that we have lost local control. That's entirely not true. Every request I made to CAL FIRE, even above and beyond the contract requirements, were met. They've been a great partner. They provide excellent service, and they save us a lot of money. That's why I believe we need to stay with that organization, at least until the expiration of the contract, which is just one more year.
Thank you. Mr. Raddatz, you obviously have a different view. Can you explain to us why you believe now is the time to part ways with CAL FIRE and go back to being a freestanding district?
Well, there's a few reasons. Fundamentally, I have to disagree with the fact that the department, in fact, needed to ever break away from CAL FIRE. If you look at the finances from the directors that were hired this last 2 years ago, it wasn't until then they started looking at money and found out how money was moved and how money was certain portions of that were hidden, in fact. So I don't actually go with the concept that we needed to leave in the first place. I will agree that we did need to restructure the organization. We had to make some fiscal changes. I just don't believe, in fact, that we needed to go to CAL FIRE in order to do that. I think we chose the easy way out. And the other thing I'd like to talk about, because it is important that we make that step now, is for the fact that contracts coming in are going to require by CAL FIRE that you can no longer opt out for that year. In fact, you have to take it to the voters to get out of your contract starting the next contracts that you hire, and then we'll decide. Now, whether that's a majority 50% plus one or that's a two-third, it depends on who you talk to and what that may be. So I think there's a lot more to this than simply fiscally. I don't personally, and from what I've done, and I've worked a lot of fire department budgets and city budgets sitting on city finance committees that really are high dollar budgets. And I just adamantly believe paperwork doesn't allow us to actually have had to leave.
Director Keel, you look like you're just itching to get in and respond to that. So
well,
go ahead.
That's patently false. And I am aware of two contracts that do have clauses that talk about early termination. And they're two-year contracts. And actually, it's the county that has imposed those restrictions on requiring a vote of the people. This is Riverside County, if I recall. I don't want to be held to that. But there are two contracts that I was made aware of that require a vote. But that vote is only if you want to terminate the contract before the term. One of them, not CAL FIRE, the county imposed that because the county is contracting with different entities and they are committing and they want the different entities to commit to being in, staying with them. So to say that CAL FIRE is requiring it is patently false. And since I've heard this, I've asked Chief Meacham if that would be a condition of our contract, and he flatly told me no.
Can I respond to that? The sure. reason why I say that, and it is true, it's not necessarily a CAL FIRE. It is in the governmental code 55603.5, and it actually states in the code that you, in fact, have to take it to the voters for your contractual agreement. And because you have to give notice prior to, there's no other way to do it without giving it the year early. In other words, you got to sign a contract. You're going to be okay. In between. This is where we just have a fundamental disagreement. I would encourage people to look up the code. It's very self-explanatory.
The bottom line is it's not in the contract right now, which expires in a year. So if they get out now, that's not an issue. But I guess if for a future contract, if CAL FIRE ever were to come back and ask for that, that's an issue that could be looked at then, and maybe that would influence the decision.
But the board always has the option to say that that is an unacceptable condition, and we don't accept it. We don't have to renew. We don't have to be committed to that sort of a caveat in the contract.
Yeah, if we do it this time.
Okay.
And then, in other words, you get caught in between.
Okay.
So just to be clear, you do not require a vote of the people if you accept the contract term, which in the case of the two example contracts was 2 years. What CAL FIRE doesn't want is they don't want to have to unexpectedly plan to reabsorb or lay off employees. They want to know that when you say you're going to contract with them for 2 years, that you actually stay the 2 years.
That, again, just isn't true. And we'll get off this subject because we could spend all day on here. I'm just going to read you the terms of one of the contracts that I hold in my hand. It says to terminate or renew the contract. It says during the agreement, this agreement may only be terminated by the voters of either the county or the city and pursuant
Kim,
of the government.
Could I take a look at that? Because there's another clause in that same contract that you have failed to read. The clause you failed to read also talks about terminating, and it can be terminated at the end of the term. And once again, it's a 2-year term. That is the contract I saw, and you very selectively read one paragraph in it. There is another paragraph that discusses terminating early, and it gives the signer the ability to do that.
Section 5, termination.
No, there's another section that covers it.
Initial terms. A one-year stay to expiration of the agreement shall be given to the county notice within the intent to enter into an agreement with the county of fire service. And so if the city intends to request a change in the fire service, then it gets to the cooperative agreement. There is no other paragraph in the termination of this, and that's what I'm reading.
Look at it. Yes, there is.
Come prepared. That's all I'm asking.
Well, I tell you what. These are contracts we're looking at that are with other agencies and other cities.
So you don't want me to look at that and find the paragraph where it
I don't want to spend all day on one simple subject. I got a lot of other stuff I want to be. I brought up a phrase.
No, you don't have to talk down to me.
Okay. I'm not trying to.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
So if you would please.
No. You can bring your paperwork, your stuff. We can debate. And that's what we're doing. And I'm not here.
I didn't know you were going to be that childish about this.
Oh, well, it's not a matter of childish. It's called being prepared. I'm sorry, Bill, if you're not.
You don't want the public to know.
The public can pull it up.
Anybody wants to know where it is, they can go to our website, which is www.savesanmiguel.com, and that part will be highlighted in it this afternoon.
Okay. Mr. Raddatz, I would like to ask you, what do you see as the key advantages to returning to being a standalone district? Obviously, there's a little bit of a risk there in terms of if the economy were to take another downturn and property values fell again. What makes you confident that that won't happen, that the district would be solvent enough to stand on its own and not have to close fire stations in the future? And what do you view as the key advantages of taking that risk?
Well, I think the key advantage is, I mean, if you look at fiscally, there's risks in everything you do. What I would like to see happen is to stop the escalating costs that CAL FIRE has coming up to our district, I think, are a little excessive. That's why we're looking at so many other departments within this state leaving CAL FIRE. This isn't just a San Miguel issue. I mean, you have Valley Center in San Diego County left. You have Half Moon Bay left. You have Marysville's left. You have Palm Springs Desert looking at leave. All of these are departments that are looking at leaving because of escalating costs. Okay, with that aside, though, I'm adamantly believe in A, transparency, and B, local control. And I understand from what Bill is saying on his needs that he has brought forth to CAL FIRE, they have worked with them, and I'm sure they have. Local control is bigger than what any specific line item budget. It has to deal with hiring personnel. What requirements are you setting forth? You have your own HR department that allows you to deal with personnel issues. That's the local control that I'm talking about. I'm talking about also the local control that allows a board of directors to build an organization that reflects the diversity of the community. And I said this up in Crest. Crest's needs are completely different than Rancho San Diego's, which are completely different from Spring Valley's. Mm-hmm. Those are really important. And you lose a certain amount of that when you're with the state and you get into what the state is so large. It's commonly portions of their departments just cookie cutter. And it's not that CAL FIRE's bad organization. They're very good at what they do. What they don't do well is hone an organization to the community's needs.
Because the firefighters sometimes are being shifted around, is that it?
That's a single item. I think more importantly is if you look here, the drop off of the interaction between schools, the interaction directly with the community, the open houses, all of that type of stuff, you lose that.
Mr. Keel, I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond to that and also to make your case for what you view as the strongest assets, I guess, of staying with CAL FIRE as opposed to going back to freestanding.
First of all, it disturbs me quite a lot when my opponent misleads the public. He obviously doesn't believe that you're smart enough to understand when you're not being told the truth. He mentioned that Half Moon Bay severed their contract with CAL FIRE.
Said looking into it.
No, what happened was Half Moon Bay did sever their contract with CAL FIRE. The citizens were so outraged at that they recalled the members of the board that did that, elected new members, and entered into a contract and re-established their contract with CAL FIRE.
And they're still battling that.
Secondly, no.
Yes, they are.
They replaced all the board members And the board then voted to continue the contract with CAL FIRE. Mm-hmm. The advantages to CAL FIRE are, you know, could we afford to go back to a standalone district? I think we probably could. Is that the best use of the public's money? No. Why would you spend more money to get essentially the same services that we're currently getting? And in the event that the economy does take a downturn, we might find ourselves in the same position where we're having to close stations and lay off firefighters. This is the fiscally responsible way to go. We have been able to, with the savings that we made, we've been able to purchase with cash. We didn't have to finance a new fire station, and we bought two new apparatus. And we were able to pay for these all. We were able to fund our reserves and get back to being a healthy district. Why would you want to, gee, now we have cash, let's figure out how we can spend it? That just isn't what I believe is the prudent way to go. Now that we have cash, let's build up our reserves and let's become a fiscally strong fire district.
And you know what he said, Bill says it is not 100% false. I do object to misleading the citizens and not telling them the truth. This is where we get a difference of opinion. He says we could go back to standalone. He just doesn't believe it to be fiscally responsible. And that's a good an opinion. And what I'll say is, after looking at the budget extensively and exclusively, and where you look where you, the board before Bill got on, chose to go to CAL FIRE, if you start looking at the figures of where the monies were and what they initially put them, like overinflating line item budgets that didn't need to be.
Can you give an example of that, something you think was overinflated?
Well, they were putting money, excessive monies to where they needed into some reserves areas. But aside from that, if you look at it from the standpoint of, I'll tell you, looking at it, it doesn't cost us more. In fact, it costs us $1.4 million less in 2017-2018. If you look at the analysis that was done for developing a budget on standalone versus the projections of what CAL FIRE is going to cost you, we're actually saving money, not going money. And there's charts and there's sheets that we both can produce. This is where we just simply have a philosophical difference of agreement.
Okay. Mr. Keel, I'm going to give you just a minute there to quickly respond to that.
Kim, I'm going to quote Ronald Reagan. There you go again. 2008, 2009, our reserves were 68,000. 2009, 2010, 733,000. 2010-11, 53,000, 11-12, 68,000, 12-13, 97,000. Then we went with CAL FIRE. Our reserves for the next 3 years were respectively 644,000, 703,000, and roughly 8 million. So we were not putting money in reserves, as you stated. We were barely funding our reserves. I don't believe I spent a good deal of time going through the budget. I spent weeks going through that budget. There wasn't fat. There weren't items that were overinflated. The budget was accurate. How many pages was that budget? I mean, you said you spent weeks. You spent a lot of time. How many pages was it? About. Four, five.
No,
about.
Bill. The trivial pettiness needs to stop.
Well, no.
Let me just answer the question. The chart that he showed, I can't disagree with. What the difference is, before you went to CAL FIRE, we needed to change the way we were doing business. When we went to CAL FIRE, they did it for us. My complaint isn't that CAL FIRE changed the way we did business to create reserves. I'm telling you, we could have done it on our own and never, never needed to make the change.
At the forum the other night in Crest, where all the candidates were there, some of them called for an independent study to really settle this question of, is the district solvent enough to stand alone? I think at least one said he might vote for that if he was convinced of it, but he's not convinced right now. This board, I believe, voted against doing an independent study. Would the two of you support or oppose such a study? And is there any chance the results of it might change how you stand on going with CAL FIRE versus being a freestanding district?
I do support having an independent study done. And yes, if that study showed that it was fiscally responsible to return to being a standalone district, and I've always maintained this, I would be voting to go to be a standalone district. The four members of the board that voted to terminate the contract earlier, one of those members, when the macro study that was done showed it costs more money to go back, it costs $2 million a year more to go back to being a standalone district, she actually insisted that we do an independent study. Our CFO did one. It showed that it changed to where it saves us money. And all of a sudden, that has become the gold standard, and that board member no longer wants an independent study. So she's done a 180 on what she has publicly mentioned.
Oh, Mr. Raddatz, how about you?
Well, there's a difference between a macro and a micro studies that go on. Micro is the big pie in the sky, looking at it from 100,000 feet down and looking at it. Is it beneficial? Is not. Micros really formulates things down. So it's not unusual in business that one will be higher than the other. That's not uncommon at all, especially in all the analysis that I've done of either cities, school districts, and or fire protection districts. So I don't see that as an issue. What I believe in and what I asked for before they even went to CAL FIRE, I sat at numerous board meetings asking the board, please, whatever you do, do an organizational analysis.
Okay, so both of you, in essence, well, would support this study.
It can be a fiscal analysis, or you can do an organizational analysis. I'll support an organizational analysis, which not only looks at the fiscal portion of each department within the department itself, it also looks on the structure, what needs to be changes internally to make it more efficient and effective. I asked for that before, and they said they didn't have enough money, and they just blew me off. And now, it miraculously, when it doesn't go their way and they're asked to go back to leave CAL FIRE, now they want an analysis, but they never, to me, have stated what type of analysis they want. So I'm opposed to just an open analysis until you can detail it down for me.
When Mr. Raddick was talking about the difference between a macro and a micro study, the macro study showed that it was going to cost $2 million a year more to go back to a standalone district. The micro study showed it was going to save $1 million. When you have
how do you
large a disparity, then you've got to get an independent opinion on it. The same person did both studies. So was she wrong the first time and right the second time, or wrong the second time and right the first time?
Well, I don't know what her guidelines were.
Yeah.
And that's critical in establishing a macro, just broad look at something, and a micro, which is a detailed. I'll tell you, the CFO that's doing this is probably one of the top most respected CFOs in the state when it comes to fire protection funding and revenue sources. So she's incredibly reputable.
Okay. Yeah, definitely a challenge. I can see where that would be difficult for any board member when you're having to try to make decisions based on such wildly conflicting information. Another question here. One of the issues that we've heard raised is the long hours that firefighters are working under CAL FIRE management versus when it was the San Miguel Firefighter Union. Under CAL FIRE, they're working 72 hours a week, whereas it was 56 back when it was the San Miguel Firefighters District. Let's start with you on this one, Bill. Are you concerned about the impact that such long hours potentially could have on morale, on retention, on, and for that matter, just on, you know, somebody being sleepy on the job?
I am, but the reality is that's what we need to do to remain fiscally solvent. We eliminated a third of our firefighters, and when I say we eliminated, they were absorbed by CAL FIRE, so we didn't have to lay anybody off. But that was just what the current economy dictates. We can take a look at another fire district. They're going to run out of money in 2017. Things are changing. The economy isn't what it used to be, and unfortunately, that's one of the new realities, and it's taking a while to permeate through the fire districts, but we get so much money coming in, and we can't spend more than that, and that's what was happening with that shift. I empathize with the firefighters that ended up getting a longer shift, but it was that or it was lay them off and shut down the stations.
Okay, Mr. Raddatz, let's hear your response to that question.
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar after 34 years in the fire service and a lot of those as being a fire chiefs on work schedules. The main difference between a 72-hour work week and a 56 is when you work a 72-hour a work week, you do work three straight shifts. You are working three straight 72 hours. And that's a fatigue stat issue yeah. with me, and it's a workers' comp issue because it's proven the longer you work and the more you're out there, the higher the workers' comp goes because of tiredness. And a 56-hour work week, it's 24 hours on and 24 hours off. In organizations that I was responsible for, we had overtime limits. We didn't let people work this late. And if it was even on overtime, we put them at a slow station. So there's that issue as it relates to work week. But what we get back to, we had to do this because it was fiscally responsible and we had to save money. This just gets back to the underlining difference of opinion we have. I'll tell you, they never had to do it to start with. And if that's the case, we have no other fire protection district in this county that had to go to Cal Fire during the recession, only ours. And I know Bill's talking about there's a department yeah. out there that is a protection district that's going to run out of money. If it is, I don't know. It sure isn't Lakeside Fire Protection District. I just talked with their fire chief the other day, and they're solvent, and they have zero worries about running out of money.
What are your views? There's been an ongoing battle out there for the CSA 115, County Service Area 115 revenues between the Lakeside Fire District and the San Miguel District. Do you think the two districts should share a fire station at Royal Road? Why or why not?
Actually, San Miguel, a couple of years ago, offered to share a facility with Lakeside, and they declined. I'm afraid that ship has kind of sailed. Lakeside is committed to building a fire station, and we are building a fire station. They're 3 miles apart. That was a bone of contention. That being said, Lakeside built their fire station less than 3 miles away from our existing fire station, so they were the first one to do that. The district and Lakeside have come to an agreement on sharing the CSA 115 revenues, and actually that's one of the things I feel was a pretty good accomplishment, was to get that revenue stream into our district, at least 50%
okay.
of it.
Mr. Raddatz, do you want to comment on that?
You know what? I don't disagree with most everything Bill said.
Okay. Good to find some common ground.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing that I would want to do as a director would be to look into it, whether it be the sharing of a station, what we're spending, what the cost is going to be ultimately on our continuing costs that would cost mm-hmm. to build a station. I know because Lakeside administration has changed so much. I don't know what their new fire chief would consider.
True,
it may not
Chief
even
Butts
be an
out
option.
There now instead of Chief Parker retired.
So it may be ideal to maintain the path we're doing. In all fairness.
We've heard from some of the firefighters that the Station 19, the Clarendon Station, has substandard conditions for firefighters. Do you agree or disagree? And if you agree, is there any remedy that the district can afford? Bill, let's go with you first as the incumbent.
One of the requests that I put to the board was to actually hire a structural engineer to survey our stations and see what work needs to be done, and that speaks towards building our reserves. By the way, one of the things that was not looked at in the micro study was those costs. Those costs are going to be costs we're going to have to bear and we're going to need to have in reserves.
What costs? I'm sorry.
Any renovation and repair to existing facilities as well as the equipment. The present majority that voted to terminate the Cal Fire contract also decided that they didn't want to know what it was going to cost in the long term to keep our fire stations in adequate condition, and they rejected the idea of going with a structural engineer to do an evaluation.
Mr. Raddatz, would you like to respond?
That is like they did and they didn't. They didn't right away, and I understand why, because in fact they have two bonds that are freeing up, one in 2019, which is a Station 15 and Station 22 bond, and the other one's a PERS bond that frees up in 2020, which brings the district to a recurring total revenue of about $2.6 million. So, and a lot of that is slated towards a capital improvement. They didn't want to spend money needlessly to do something that initially, when you're doing a startup fire department, your capital improvements aren't going to be right away within your first probably 12 to 36 months, unless something out of the ordinary comes up that you needed to. So I can understand why they didn't go with it. I personally don't disagree that all our stations should be looked at and to see what they need to be done. And that needs to be done by someone that's capable of doing that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Real quick though, we weren't contracting with a structural engineer to actually do plans or specs to do the work. It was just to give us a forecasting tool to see where we may need to go. One other thing that you mentioned that needs, there's another little detail. CalPERS recently increased by over $1 million a year what the district has to pay for retirement. That number is going to continue to go up for 4 more years. It's going to be held at that elevated position for another 10 years before it starts to gradually go back down. So this district's got about $19 million in unfunded CalPERS liabilities. And that's something that also wasn't really considered. We're going to incur more CalPERS liabilities because all of a sudden, all of these firefighters are going to be our employees again. They're not going to be Cal Fire's employee. And that's part of what that 10% went to that the opposition likes to mention so much, but all of their CalPERS expenses were paid by Cal Fire.
Mr. Raddatz, do you have a comment on that?
Well, there's unfunded liabilities that we're talking about. This gets again to your philosophical difference. If you look at the state of California's unfunded liabilities, it's billions of dollars. There's a difference between an unfunded liability and a liability that you can't manage.
Okay.
So that's the difference. You can throw out unfunded liabilities all day, and I don't know a state or a protection district or most federal that don't have unfunded liabilities. People all can right. call your mortgage an unfunded liability. It's manageable in this district.
My point was just that that's an extra charge of at least $1 million a year that the district is going to have to pay that wasn't accounted for.
From the public's point of view, you know, it's one thing to talk about the money situation and how many hours the firefighters are working. But when I talk to members of the public, really what it boils down to for most of them is they want to know if their house is on fire, somebody's going to be there to put it out. If there's a wildfire, someone's going to be there to battle it. There can be pros and cons both ways on this. We've seen a fire station closed before when it was freestanding. So obviously, if you live near that station, you know, you were in trouble. On the other hand, I've heard concerns from people about what if there's a giant wildfire in some other county and a lot of these Cal Fire firefighters get somewhere else to fight it. Well, how confident are we that there would be, you know, enough local firefighters left here to protect us when we have house fires or, heaven forbid, a major wildfire starts down here? Kim, let's let you take that. Tackle that question first.
Well, it's interesting because all fire departments belong to what's called the state mutual aid agreement.
Yeah.
That systematically allows you to help out neighboring departments, whether it be cities, counties, through up and down the state, or even local jurisdictions, for instance, El Cajon, if they needed help and so forth from San Miguel and vice versa. The interesting portion of the contract that a lot of people have a tendency to ignore or forget, there's a little clause in there that says like resources. So in the state, the difference that we have right now is Cal Fire is our operational portions of our district. They can take their employees and send them anywhere they want. Then they'll fill our stations at their will.
Are you confident that that would happen?
I do. I do think it will happen. What I'm not confident in, it will happen in a timely manner. And that's a difference where if you're a local organization, you have control of your own organization and operational control.
So if I ask to send them elsewhere, you can just
so
say
so you can
no.
actually turn around and look, and it's happened numerous times in this county where you go, you know what? I cannot send a unit today. So you can control when your units leave your district versus the state sending them away.
Bill, what do you have to say on that issue?
Well, number one, we have never, during my tenure anyway, been in a position where we weren't able to respond to a incident in our district. And that will never happen. whether we're CAL FIRE or standalone. We are not going to, when you call 911, you're not going to get, sorry, there's nobody available to help you. There will always be somebody that will be able to make it. And those incidents are fairly rare. And generally the way we fill them is we authorize overtime and we require our people to stay on the job until that temporary crisis is over. And I think Kim will agree on this. There's not going to be a case where we're not going to be there to respond.
Responding isn't the issue here, though, because if you have a station that, say, it has five stations, you can have four of them gone. And by what Bill just said, I have one station left for 54 square miles, and I have a medical aid. They're responding. So, I mean, that is an extreme case, but there, Bill's right. You will always have someone coming.
But it might take
a little
longer.
But what is in a timely manner and what is the most efficient way to run our operational?
Bill, I see you shaking your head there.
So that's when you're talking about, I'm talking about manning all stations.
I want to just chime in.
Okay.
We have never not manned all stations with CAL FIRE.
Does that include medical? In other words, could there potentially be any delay at all in medical response?
Our stations are manned by paramedics. So no, the answer to your question
is no. Okay, so even if CAL FIRE was off fighting a fire in Riverside or somewhere, the medical would be manned. And the response time would be the same?
Correct.
Okay.
Once they get filled, though. See, that's the problem. I'm not disagreeing with what Bill says. It's how fast can that fire that get filled? And I see Bill shaking his head, but I was zone coordinator of all emergency operations in East County. And when you're standalone and you have the agreements, for instance, when you're in East County Zone 4, they have what's called move-up companies. So your station could be empty. You could get another person coming up sitting from another district, sitting in your station until you backfill. So the amount of time in which a station gets filled with adequate people is huge.
We have been through emergencies. We have been through big fires since CAL FIRE has been providing suppression services. And the scenario you're talking about has never happened. We have always had all of our stations manned 24/7. So maybe, yes, maybe there could be some huge crisis that changes that. But right now we've had large fires and we have always had our stations manned 24/7.
You've never had large fires. You've had incidents.
No.
And I really like the way it's, I love this. This is the philosophical difference on having someone that's got 34 years experience sat on state and national overhead teams and Bill's telling me how it works. I just love it. It's just naiveness. And I don't mean that to be patronizing, Bill. You just don't have that knowledge base.
Okay. I do have the knowledge base for what happened since CAL FIRE has been with us.
Okay.
And the scenario you're talking about has never happened.
And I think you're just ignorant.
I'm going to get the last word on this one and just say that it's very reassuring to hear it's never happened since we had the partnership with CAL FIRE. That said, we have not had a Cedar Fire or a 2007 wildfire scenario here where the whole county was such a big disaster. So I think there's this.
You know, we had some pretty big fires where some of our people had to go to Los Angeles area. Mm-hmm,
right, but not at a time when we had a major wildfire, a catastrophic wildfire, I would say, going on here. We've had some small, moderate ones, but not huge. But at any rate, it's very reassuring that thus far it looks like CAL FIRE is doing what it's supposed to do as far as backfilling stations, and we hope that will continue. We need to move on. We've got a couple more questions to get in. Several years ago, one of the controversies in terms of funding was approving money to build a state-of-the-art training center for San Miguel, which would have been great for the firefighters, the training, if it had gotten built. But due to the budget crunch, that is still unfinished. Do either of you foresee a way to ever get that completed? And if so, how would you fund it? Where would the money come from? Bill.
Actually, we had an agreement drafted where the county was going to finish the training center. I can't speak for certain as to why they all of a sudden changed their mind, but they all of a sudden changed their mind when the new board majority started publicly berating CAL FIRE. And once again, they say that the reason that they didn't sign that agreement was stormwater. I believe that that may just be an excuse and that they were kind of put off by how we were treating them. And I think that might be the cause of the, as I said, that agreement was inked and ready to be signed. And yeah. All of a sudden, once we changed, they backed out. So hopefully, if the slate that I'm running with is successful, we will be able to improve our relationship with Cal Fire, which has been seriously degraded, and I believe they will want a partner. They were excellent partners when we were working with them, and I think that that would be a method to fund that.
Kim,
thoughts on that? Yeah, I don't kind of believe in that conspiracy theory. And the reason I say that, I've worked pretty close with most everybody in the county as a fire chief. And even if you disagree with them or you have a difference of an opinion, I've never found anybody in as far as the county fire authority being a quid pro quo type of person. So, you know, the fact that they disagreed with Cal Fire for them to turn around and say that, oh, we're not going to build a facility or given the excuse of wastewater and not thinking, in fact, it's wastewater or stormwater. Excuse me, Bill. Thank you. You know, I think it does a disservice to the county, and it's kind of insulting for those people that they don't. That training center was even started because of grant money that never should have been started in the beginning to get money to build this so-called kingdom by the past fire chief, which is a shame. And we have this terrible egg that we're trying to hard boil and make it into something. I don't know if there's a salvation for that.
Moving on, can each of you tell us who your major endorsements are for yourself or for your slate of candidates that you're running with? And listeners, if you've just tuned in, we're speaking with candidates running for the San Miguel Fire Board, the two that are here today, each representing one of the two slates, Director Bill Keel, and challenger Kim Raddatz, who's a retired fire chief. Bill, let's start with you.
I'll be brief. I'm endorsed by Supervisor Jacob, and I'm also endorsed by the San Diego Republican Party. And those are the two major endorsements I have, although I do have others.
Okay. Kim Raddatz, how about you?
You know, when I started this campaign, I didn't seek endorsements because it is a tough thing to do. You know, for instance, Diane Jacobs, I didn't seek her endorsement. I knew it was a position. She's a Cal Fire person that through the County Fire Authority. And I know her well. I just didn't want to put her in the position. I am endorsed by Budget Watchdog on how to fiscally look at budgets and hold people accountable. And then the community itself, you know, through the citizens of San Miguel. So those are the people that have chose to pull on board with me. I chose not to seek any endorsements.
What about the firefighter unions? And is it two different unions now, or are they melded into one with the former San Miguel Fire Union and Cal Fire?
The former union was 1434. They are currently not in existence because they're all 2881 right now.
So that's basically the Cal Fire
Union. So the citizens of San Miguel are primarily for old 1434 people. So Kim is supported by the old union, the former
the San members Miguel of the union. The old the union. Members, okay, right. The San Miguel one.
And I'm supported by 2881.
Which is the Cal Fire
Union. One thing I did want to mention is the old union is shooting for a 30% hourly pay raise. That's what they are going to end up getting when they go back. They are going to get the same pay and benefits that they got with Cal Fire, and they're going to be working about 30% fewer hours.
There's more. It really isn't old union against new union. There's only one union supporting candidates, the Cal Fire Union.
But the other one has individual members.
Also has mixed community members. Community businesses have funded that. It's more of a diverse funding than just being 100% Cal Fire back. But getting back into the other comment about the 30%, that's what they want, and what this actually gets put together for a finalized budget are two completely different things. We won't know what that is.
So
we have a projection in the micro study, which states what Bill is saying. But once again, nothing signed, and there is room for movement in that.
Actually, that's incorrect.
No,
letters,
it's not.
Offers of employment have gone out, and they have been returned signed.
Correct.
So
absolutely.
They listed the terms of employment, and that equates to 28.5%, to be exact, hourly pay raise.
Which we can afford.
Quick question. Will you accept the meeting stipend for board members that's available if you are elected?
Actually, that topic came up at the last board meeting, but the meeting before that, it was broached upon, and the suggestion was to wait till the new board is seated. I will go with what the majority of the board wants. I can speak for myself. If the board majority wants the stipend to be zero and they vote for that, I'll support it.
And Mr. Raddatz,
regardless of what the board is I won't take a stipend. I don't believe that's why we're here to serve the public.
Where can people find more information about each of you individually as candidates, as well as is there a website for the slate of candidates that you're running with for people who want to read more? Bill?
Yes. For me, they can go to www.williamkeel.com, K-I-E-L. And for the slate, they can go to www.savesanmiguel.com.
And Kim?
I have a political page on Facebook. All you have to do is type in Kim Raddatz.
And that's R-A-D-D-A-T-Z.
That is correct. And then you can go to Citizens of San Miguel, has a website also that represents the four of us as it goes to that portion.
Okay. I'm going to let each of you have the final word here. Bill Keel, let's go with you first.
I believe that our slate is for fiscal responsibility and having a sustainable fire district that will be able to last for some time into the future.
Mr. Raddatz?
And thank you. So, and what I believe is that we need an organization that's going to be built to represent the needs of this diverse community. Fiscal responsibility, I'm adamant on. And what I think most people have heard today is there's a difference of opinion on which side can do that. I think we can be fiscally responsible, have diversity of the community, listen to the input from the citizens of this fine district, and then give them the fire department that best suits their needs.
Well, I really want to thank you both for joining us. We can certainly see that both of you have a lot of passion, a lot of fire on both sides for protecting the district in the interest of the taxpayers and the people who live here. So I want to thank you both for taking the time out of your schedules to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes live music at La Mesa's newest wine tasting room, a fall planstravaganza, the Ramona Art and Wine Festival, and the opening of trout fishing season in Santee.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including a holiday open house at Summers Past Farms, a paintaholic program in La Mesa, a Veterans Day commemoration in El Cajon, the Casa de Oro Fall Festival, the Mother Goose Parade, holiday concerts at Parkway Plaza, and more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
La Mesa Wine Works will have live music this weekend. On Friday, November 5th, Chet and the committee's band will perform swinging good time blues and boogie music from 7 to 9 p.m. Barbecue food will be available. Then on Saturday night, November 6th, you can hear Stage 4 Jazz from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. playing jazz, rhythm, and blues music and savor items from a snack grill truck. For more information on these and other upcoming events, you can visit lamesawineworks.com.
The Water Conservation Garden at Queen Mecca College in Rancho San Diego hosts its annual Fall Planstravaganza on Saturday, November 5th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event aims to help you make the most of fall planting season with a plentiful mix of gardening experts and plants offered by local growers and nurseries. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
The 4th annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival will be held on November 5th. This year, the event is at Beegent Ranch in Ramona. Guests can savor vintages from local wineries, sample foods from the local restaurants and caterers, shop for artwork from local artists, and bid on hand-painted wine barrels, all to benefit the Ramona Heart Mural Project. For details and tickets, visit ramonaartandwinefest.net.
2,500 pounds of rainbow trout will be stocked for the trout opener at Santee Lakes on November 5th from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. Prizes for the largest fish as well as the tag fish. No state license required. For directions to the lake, visit SanteeLakes.com.
Summer's Past Farms in Flin Springs will host an old-fashioned holiday open house on Thursday, November 10th from 5 to 8 p.m. Christmas music and hot wassail drinks will be provided. Guests are invited to bring a plate of your favorite holiday cookies to share. The barn, store, and soap shop will be decked with lights and holiday decor, and you can shop for holiday gifts, fall items, and home decor. For details, you can visit summerspastfarms.com.
If you're looking to enjoy an artistic experience while sipping wine, you can learn how to paint your own masterpiece with Paintaholics at the San Pasquale Tasting Room on November 10th and 17th from 6 to 9 p.m. Learn more in the events section at sanpasqualewinery.com.
Kids Dance Company will present 1968 at the San Diego Performing Arts Center on November 11th and 12th. The production will show you how 1968 changed the world and in many ways parallels 2016. You can tap your toes to hit songs of 1968 and see new works including Mama Said and Kids Dance Company's 1968/2016.
Honoring our veterans, El Cajon's annual Veterans Day ceremony will be held on November 11th from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at the Centennial Plaza. The event includes music from students from Valhalla High School and a color guard presentation by Marines from Miramar. The Casa de Oro Community Alliance announces the first annual fall festival on Saturday, November 19th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The festival will be held in the Casa de Oro Plaza across the street from Starbucks. Family fun, games, live music, children's interactive crafts, and the Fern Street Circus with face painting and entertainment for all will be provided. For more information, visit Casa de Oro Community Alliance on Facebook at facebook.com/Casa de Oro Community Alliance.
On Sunday, November 20th, the Mother Goose Parade will again march down Main Street for the 70th year. Also known as a children's parade, it begins at 1 p.m. See over 100 colorful and exciting parade entries, including floats, marching bands, clouds, equestrians, local dignitaries, and Santa Claus. The route is downtown Main Street, from El Cajon Boulevard eastbound to First Street. This popular parade is one of the largest parades in Southern California and a wonderful way to officially kick off the holiday season. To learn more, you can visit mothergooseparade.org.
You can enjoy the holiday musical performances at Parkway Plaza on the Macy's stages starting November 26th through December 24th. Upcoming performances include the Southwestern College Big Band on November 26th and the Celtic Nations Pipe Band on December 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. For a full schedule of events, visit shoppingparkwayplaza.com/events.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.